Hey, welcome to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. Rare introduction with my co-host, Jay Kang, on the line. Hello, Jay.
Hello.
Sounds like there is some great ice cream truck action where you are.
You know, I'm in my office, which is like basically in a industrial part of Brooklyn. And so I'm looking down on this alleyway between two industrial buildings, and there's an ice cream truck that's sitting there. I have no idea what it's hoping for. Like, the only people around here are annoying artists.
It's for you. if you have to ask who is the ice cream truck for,
oh my God, it's
for you.
So loud.
very, very sorry to everyone listening at home for this ice cream truck, but we're just gonna ride on. This is Coin Talk. It's the show of Bitcoin sadness, occasional joy, sometimes somewhere in between. We're brought to you in partnership with Medium. Medium has tons of great writing about crypto. It's all at me.dm/crypto. Hey, you should become a member if you're reading a lot of stuff on Medium. You hit their wall. It's $5 a month. You get all kinds of great stuff, like the transcripts to this show. Speaking of which, here is the show. Okay, Jay, I'm gonna do the throw here myself.
Okay,
I'm gonna play the music. Yeah. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Wednesday, August 22nd at 1:33 p.m. The Bitcoin price index I'm stalling until I can open my portfolio is $6,433.
Wow, that robot sounds a lot like you if you were doing a robot voice. Oh my God! I thought for a second that the
we paid a lot of money for that robot, AJ. So it's probably the biggest line item. That robot's basically the third host by cost. The expenses that we've incurred with that robot. Speaking of robots, man, I've been feeling pretty crappy about crypto this week, and I feel like the robots have gotten all the gains. Like the dominant news story this cycle, there was that New York Times story about retail investors losing money. It's just a bummer. No one wants to hear about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can't. Like, who is actually making the money then if retail investors are the ones that's losing it?
Robots. I think that the exchanges are making money on every trade. It's just like gambling. The people who make the money in the gambling are the people who like skim off every transaction.
So where are the suckers who are like buying and selling junk stocks while the exchanges and the bankers behind all of this are the ones that are just making money off fees?
To me, the most interesting story of the last year really is Bitmain, which is now worth as much as I think every coin except Bitcoin. I mean, they've taken a lot of the money that's been earned in crypto. So I think when a historian like unpacks all this financial history, it may be like, oh, like miners and exchanges got 98% of the profits of the whole
crypto. And everyone who paid into it were just suckers.
And then like the Winklevosses and the like the early whales, but basically the early whales and the people with a institutional position in the ecosystem. And I would say at this point, I look at something like Chinese mining as almost something like an institution. Like, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, as long as crypto is around, I can't imagine what would cause them to lose their stranglehold. I mean, you know, weirder things do happen in crypto from time to time, but, you know, it's just such a dominant right now, and everything else is in such disarray that, you know, I think that it would have to be like a revolutionary technology change that would, you know, or even like the unveiling of Satoshi or something like that. Honestly, I thought that's what we were going to talk about this week. Like, I felt like this was going to be our first non-doom and gloom
Jay,
in a while.
Jay faked me out, and he sent me an Amazon link this week that was, it's true, to the book that our favorite for who Satoshi is, Excerptoshi, the man who published an excerpt from a potential book out from the Satoshi Nakamoto, I think the Nakamoto Family Foundation.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I knew that this was happening was because after Excerptoshi first came out, I wrote an email to the email that was attached for it, and I said that I've been trying to find Satoshi for years. I co-host Coin Talk, a Bitcoin-related podcast. Is there any way I could speak to someone on the record or off, who was at the Nakamoto Family Foundation. And they wrote me back yesterday and said, that will not be necessary. The embargo has been lifted. Everything he wishes to be expressed has been posted on the site as of today, which I took to mean that the book was out, you know, and that's why I was emailing you all that stuff. But apparently it's not. It's just like the galley for the book. So this is like the most interminable launch party ever.
But wait, how can we get a galley of the book? That's all we need so we can review it on the show.
I mean, I don't know. Okay, do you want me to write the Nakamoto Family Foundation back and be like,
I'm gonna say this. Me and you don't know the most about crypto. I'm not even sure we know an above average amount about crypto. But I will say, I think we've taken Excerptoshi about as seriously as anyone. We have given his literature a deeper read than almost anyone. And I believe that we did it on the good faith that Excerptoshi might actually be Satoshi.
We never said that this is not Satoshi.
So, okay, so I have a few options here. One is we could try and backdoor it and book Excerptoshi on the long form podcast as if it's like a literary thing, but then it'll just be me and you waiting there for your ass. I cannot tell what is going on with this other than like Occam's razor is that it's just some person said, I'm Satoshi Nakamoto. I am the Nakamoto Family Foundation. And there's nothing out there that really stops you from doing that.
Yeah. It just seems very, you know, the book itself, like the new messages on the Nakamoto Family Foundation website, which include like a couple more of those puzzles that he put in the first one. Remember in the first message, there was like a cryptogram. So there's a new cryptogram. I did not bother trying to solve it because I know that it would probably be really easy, but also beyond my capacities, which is a very frustrating duality of circumstances. But yeah, I mean, I think that we should just ask for it. Okay, I'll ask for the excerpt, or I'll ask for a galley of it. I don't know if a self-published ebook really has galleys, but maybe they can give us like a self-exploding PDF or like galleys on the blockchain or something like that so they can track if we send it to somebody else.
What is your take on like why this rollout is coming so slow? Like if you're going to do a hoax, generally you just like drop the internet with the hoax. Are we supposed to believe this is more real because it's coming out in successive waves? So when the actual book comes out, me and you will have already like spent like 6 hours of airtime talking about Excerptoshi. Well,
if the con is to try and get media people to puzzle over it and talk about it at every stage, they have found their marks.
I mean, my true hope is that we eventually can have whoever is behind Excerptoshi on the show and they will explain themselves and be able and explain to us why they did this and why these details, like my mother was like in publishing, like why these like bizarre set of details have been mapped onto the person Satoshi.
Well, there's new details. Did you hear about this?
Oh no, I didn't. No. Tell me.
This is on the Nakamoto Family Foundation website, and we are now approaching like 5 minutes talking about this.
Podcasting is
all right. No one knows that I come from the Caribbean and have family still there, or my life as a former professional poker player, or the decency to consider the possibility. His grammar is a little off. Or the decency to consider the possibility that my focus is strictly placed on my family, which is what inspired the title of the book. Surely some of you remember meeting me at FC09. That you didn't know it was me that you were talking to is no fault of your own. It pains me to know that he also says,
I'd like to say that this speech is kind of in the tone of like a Bond villain. Yeah. Who's like, it was me behind it all. When you met that strange woman at the hotel, she was my spy. I was watching you all along, Bond. And it's like, yeah, we didn't know that who was you because we still don't know
exactly
who you are.
So the other, and this is sad, but the other detail that he put in there is that his grandmother has been diagnosed with leukemia, and that it has reminded him of the ill effects of being an immigrant child coming to a new country with nothing and being face to face with the realities of immigrant life. So Satoshi has now sort of revealed that he's an immigrant from the Caribbean. And then, but
that, I mean, that I agree is a rational read of that. I still don't know. Like, he didn't literally say that. He said, "I'm from the Caribbean and I'm an immigrant." Like, that you could read that a few ways. That could be like a Dutch guy who like grew up in what's the Dutch island in the Caribbean?
Antilles.
And then was like in Antilles, and then their parent moved to like work on Wall Street.
Yeah.
Like I'm just saying.
That's true.
We can make no assumptions about Exar Toshi, because he's withholding information from us and playing with our hearts.
Like, remember, I know that the Little League World Series is on, but like maybe 10 years ago, there's a Little League World Series team from Saudi Arabia, and it was all American. It's all American kids who are like 6'2" or something like that.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, Saudi Arabia's Little League team. And it's all like people obviously who are working there in the oil industry. So it could be something like that. I think you're right. Or he could be like a Dutch Aruban, like Sidney Ponson, former pitcher for the Baltimore Orioles, and now immigrated to the United States back from who knows?
I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. I will say, just reading this as a pure work of literature, which is how we always encounter Exar Toshi, I do think that these details of saying, like, my story has an element of the immigrant story in it, very quickly, like, led my mind towards some of the stuff that's happened in Venezuela and these, like, transitioning economies. Like, did Exar Toshi have some sort of formative experience with a collapsing market that led to the creation of Bitcoin? Because we already know that Satoshi was very interested in the economic crash, but Satoshi would have already been a working adult by
now. Or like, did he?
Is there some previous economic trauma in the Satoshi?
Or like, did
story?
He grow up in St. Kitts amongst like a cul-de-sac of money launderers and thought to himself, what is the most efficient way of laundering money out there?
I mean, I'm just gonna say that, like, taking Exar Toshi literally as his word, Exar Toshi could be an American kid, like a Dan Bilzerian type, whose father was a white collar criminal who fled to the Caribbean, and he could describe being an immigrant like in St. Kitts or Trinidad or something like that. And that would really, in a novelistic sense, make a lot of sense, that this was someone who was like avenging the regulatory persecution of his father figure.
Oh yeah. Well, look, I mean, I think that it is interesting that he's like saying the one part that stuck out to me, honestly, was he was like, when you met me at FC09, I don't know what that is, but I imagine it's like something conference 09.
I feel like that's some like rap shit talk. It's like, when I grabbed your chain at the 2001 yeah. VMAs, you knew who I was. You didn't know that I was Satoshi, but you knew that you were talking to someone who grabbed your chain.
It's kind of like he's, you know, like there is this like, oh, you didn't expect like the immigrant kid from the Caribbean to be the one that was like leading you along the whole way, you know? Like, I'm just a humble man from humble beginning. You know, it's like, it almost feels like it's like, verbal Kint, like coming out as Kaiser Sose, being like, you never suspected me. You know, you thought I was dumb. Well, you thought you were smart, but guess what, bitches?
He's taunting the audience a little bit, and he's suggesting that the reason people haven't figured him out is that they've somehow doubted him, or that they couldn't imagine a person like him being Satoshi, which presents a very like weird picture, because I don't even really know what the mainstream idea of who Satoshi is. I guess he would be saying, I'm not like a Nick Szabo type, like cryptographer, like a libertarian type, but he is that, I think. And he's saying he was at this conference that I'm just going to guess that conference was like a conference, a bunch of the people who were suspected of being Satoshi era Bitcoin people had been.
Yeah, and so like compiling what we know then, right? We know that his grandmother, who has leukemia now, ran a printing press, right? A sort of publishing house. We know that he says he is from the Caribbean and that he is an immigrant, that he was at FC09, right? Like,
that's right before Bitcoin.
Okay, so
right?
I guess my question would be, like, don't you feel like at this point maybe we could triangulate who this might be? Like, how many people were at FC09, you know? And how many of them
I agree.
Like, of Caribbean descent? And so, like, FC09 was financial cryptography, 09, data security, the 13th International Conference, which was in Accra Beach Hotel and Resort in Barbados.
Maybe he's just fucking... He was like, I was, like, on the wait staff at FC09 when I was working as like a hotel worker in Barbados, but I like was the true originator of Bitcoin. I mean, is he going to give away what his real identity is as part of this, or is this book going to be published anonymously and it's just a clue again that people are going to try to figure it out? Cause I would agree with you. If this was the real person, you have enough data points to figure out who it is. However, those data points may not point to anyone because there's no real evidence at all here that's unique that this is Satoshi.
Well, the interesting thing is that I'm looking over the speaker list at FC09, and it's a lot of academics. You know, like it's not like it's not people who like it's people from Harvard, it's people from the University of Cambridge, Indiana, UC Berkeley. That's just one panel. You know, like.
But that's anyone who is involved in what would become the field of crypto then would have been an academic.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree. Really so have. It is actually like kind of a specific reference, you know? So like, and that actually is interesting to me. Like, you know, he is FC09, I'm sure, is not something that one can just Google and come up with without knowing at least a little bit about this world.
Well, it's possible that if he's familiar with the world of Satoshi hunters, which we have to assume that he is, and this is true whether he is Satoshi or Excerptoshi, he would know. I don't know this for a fact, but I would guess that there are, as there is in serial killer lore, certain hot spots where it's like I just read Michelle McNamara's book about the Golden State Killer. And like when they looked at the strongest evidence, she correctly predicted that he went to Sacramento State, which is a pretty limited pool of people, you know, and that she knew his approximate age, and they were right about that stuff. So if Excerptoshi says, oh, I was at FC09, I'm guessing that somewhere on forums, if we track this long enough, we'd find that this is like the core, like Nick Szabo, a bunch of these like high probability people were there. It's like locating himself as within a certain milieu without like literally calling out his own identity. But I agree with you. Just with the like, I grew up in the Caribbean. I feel like you could get to a list of a few at most.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that what I would do if I was a journalist is I would look through this.
What are you on sabbatical?
I'm divesting from journalism.
Oh yeah, you're short.
I'm
you're
shorting journalism. I went on BitMEX and put a huge short on. Yeah.
You've been taking out puts on Civil.
Hey, those are our friends. I would.
I'm not short on journalism. You're the one who's short on journalism.
I think what I would do is I would just call or I would email all the people on this list. You know. And just ask them, like, you know, like, was there, do you have any idea? Like, did you talk to somebody who talked about their grandmother who ran a printing press, you know? And there's like, I would say like 100 people on this list. It seems like their schedule is that they had, you know, like maybe 8 days together or five days together. And you would think that if that maybe one of these people did talk to somebody of Caribbean descent, perhaps, whose grandmother did run a printing press and then or a publishing house, and then you have who Excerptoshi is, right? I mean,
right. But we're no closer to knowing whether Excerptoshi is Satoshi. All we know now is that the person who's clearly being fingered by this document is a real person, which doesn't even prove that that's Excerptoshi. It proves that Excerptoshi has written a work of speculative fiction using the identifying details of this person. I just can't believe that this honeypot leads back somewhere rational. Because if it does, then, I mean, the most bombastic thing to do would be like on the last page of the book, you're like flipping, flipping, flipping. And it's like, oh, I forgot. Here are the private keys.
Yeah.
and it'll be like, whoa, you know? Short of that, there's really nothing.
Here's
to
the other
about.
Problem that I have is that the release date for this book says it's in January. That's so far away.
But that's kind of public.
No, but it's self-published. It's not like he's waiting for like Random House to do a publicity round, you know, and waiting for the right timing to like tie it to the election or something.
What percentage chance? Okay, it's January 4th. Me and you are betting on the Augur market. We've both just purchased the book and then like stayed up all night, read the whole thing. What is the percentage chance that you wake up that morning thinking the person who wrote this book is a real person and is the real creator?
Oh, I mean, look, if we're talking, you know, seriously, I would say very low, like under 1%. But I don't know. I actually think of all the Satoshi hoaxes and all the Satoshi stories, you know, whether Dorian, Nakamoto, although that one was pretty funny, honestly, except for, you know, the sort of anguish it caused Dorian himself. I would say this is at least the most fun, don't you think? Like, it's like, it has a lot of elements to it, and it's so weird that the guy is... We've been talking about it for 22 minutes now.
It's a little like the P tape, and that it's a little too far to be believable. Oh, yeah. But then there's like a weird double take where you're like, but doesn't that make it a little bit believable? Yeah. Like, I was going to say closer to like 20 to 1, 30 to 1. Like, I think it's more like a 5. 2%, 3% chance that this is the real person. And that this isn't just that they're real. This is that like the book presents some incontrovertible journalistic proof that they're Satoshi, which they could have, you know, like it's not just the private keys. There's multiple routes to proof. And we don't really know what all of them are because we don't know what cards Satoshi is currently holding, or even if Satoshi is currently alive, or if Satoshi is a man or a woman. I will say this book, it is surprising to me how far you can take a hoax like this without really doing more than put up like a website that has no CSS.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, I basically am of the mind right now that, whoever is doing this is convinced that he is Satoshi. I don't think it's a joke.
Interesting. So this is you're going for more of like a mad genius, like the Joker.
Well, it's like, I mean, I think this is something that I've mentioned on the show before, but like when I wrote about Satoshi in the past, you know, I got some phone calls from people who, you know, it was honestly a little scary, but it was people who would call and tell me that they're Satoshi, you know, and I would say, okay. And then within 5 minutes, they would tell me that they had also invented like email and the internet and, you know, like self-driving cars where, you know, like it was people who were obviously crazy, but there's clearly no incentive for that person to call me and say this sort of stuff unless they really believed it. And so I feel like there is like a version of this where the person who is saying that he's ex-Satoshi is actually convinced that he is actually Satoshi. Otherwise, like, I don't know. It's an incredibly good ruse if it is. Like,
I like this. I like this route. Like, I'm seeing like a follow-up in the like our Bitcoin maximalist movie, future movies scenario, where, okay, so in the present day, a young economist in the Nouriel Roubini mode is like trying to sound the alarms against Bitcoin maximalism. And he's just like shouting from the hilltops, like, it's going to zero. It's going to zero. And as the Bitcoin world comes, he gets driven completely insane. And then at the end, he's in an asylum and everyone's like, I am Satoshi Nakamoto. No, I am Satoshi Nakamoto. Because it's a litmus test of
like
who.
It's
like
the end of Amadeus when Salieri is being whipped through the insane asylum. But instead, everybody is screaming about how they're Satoshi.
I mean, it's a litmus test of like what the greatest grandiose thought of yourself in your era is. That people in an insane asylum think that's who they are. They think they are Michael Jackson or that they are Jesus Christ. I mean, I think probably historically like the leader in people in insane asylums thinking they're that person is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah, no. But I agree with that. I think it's a interesting.
In a Bitcoin maximalist universe, Satoshi Nakamoto as Jesus will be Jesus.
But I also
Christ,
think that right? part of the sort of evidence of how pervasive and interesting the Satoshi myth is that there are people who probably have no idea what Bitcoin is who, you know, are pretending to be Satoshi Nakamoto. You know, like it's not just for Bitcoin people, the myth. Like it's something that has pervaded other people to get sort of in the psyche of people who are unwell to be like, oh yeah, and I also invented Bitcoin, you know, in addition to like these other mysteries that I account for, you know? So I don't know. That's interesting.
There's probably hundreds of Satoshis all over the world. Like dudes who are like hanging around like Swiss wine bars, like picking up women and being like, I'm secretly Satoshi.
That's a terrible grift.
I mean, like people, like there was a guy impersonating Stanley Kubrick. So if there's like that, think how many people would like say they're Satoshi Nakamoto. And like, since basically I think people's like born in assumption is that Satoshi Nakamoto is some kind of a nerdy white guy, like 20% of the people like out there like could claim to be Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not worldwide.
But not Ex-Satoshi. Ex-Satoshi is not Caribbean.
Ex-Satoshi is of Caribbean descent and has repeatedly, the main thing we know about Ex-Satoshi is Ex-Satoshi is recklessly narrowing the circle around his own.
Well, yeah, at this, I mean, I really do think I could probably email all these people today and get some answer back. Now, it might be that none of them remember any conversation, and actually more likely that would be true, but, you know, like that would at least be a start, you know, like how many people are at this conference? It couldn't have been more than a couple hundred.
Can we just commission Adrian Chan to do this for us?
Adrian, I've divested from journalism and
Adrian,
I need your help.
I double dare you to email every single person on the FC09, investigate them personally, and come on the show and report to us about it.
Actually, I am going to send this to Adrian. I'll see what he says. I sent him the Ex-Satoshi thing and he didn't even read it. And I was like, why did you not read it? And he was like, because it was so obviously bullshit. Can you stop wasting my time?
I feel like Adrian Chen's refusal to discuss Ex-Satoshi with us is more evidence that Ex-Satoshi,
or it is more evidence that Adrian is Ex-Satoshi.
Because, like, what if Adrian is like hot on the trail of Ex-Satoshi and he's like, oh, Aaron and Jay gotta stop taking this so seriously, they're gonna blow like my scoop that it was Ex-Satoshi.
Let's go to the bad story right now, which is the ETH market,
okay,
or the ETH market. I don't know how to pronounce it, but like the Ethereum market is doing terribly right now.
Yeah. I mean, did you notice that just because I became an Ethereum maximalist during the crash, or have you actually been watching it for reasons other than holding?
Yeah, it's money? Mostly like, I don't even think it's really shot at Freud. I think it's probably just like actual like being a dick where you started telling me that you were buying Ethereum and then I started checking to see if it had gone down.
You definitely have never been a huge Ethereum fan. And to be honest, other than my very first forays, I wasn't either. I think I was kind of playing, like, you know when people play poker and you kind of just assume every hand's going to go, like, more or less, like, an average poker hand? Like, I was kind of like, okay, well, you know, it's kind of wrecked to Bitcoin. They're probably just going to both go back up. And at that point, it'll gain Bitcoin. Like, I don't have like a very deep investment thesis, which brings me to like, I finally asked our friend Ledger Status. I was like, hey, man, we got to start shilling some ETH here. Like, we got to get this market going here. What's going on? He was like, well, no one really gives a shit about ICOs anymore. And what's the demand for Ethereum when no one cares about ICOs? And I was like, oh, yeah, fuck.
We love Ledger, and I will say that one of the downsides of having somebody who is reasonable and smart in your life that you can talk to is that when they say something deflating and right, you can't really argue about it.
I had like no argument against it. It was like a like old person asking someone how the printer worked, and they're like, you have to turn the printer on. And I was like, oh, thank you, young man. And I was like, I didn't, like, in a sports context, I would always like be like, yeah, but. And this one, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fuck.
You're totally right. I mean, like, how long has it been on this show since we've talked about
it? Okay, so to risk a little bit of, like, silly correlative thought, though, you know,
you think we killed the ICO market by mocking it on the show.
The peak of Ethereum, right, which was around $1,500, right, $1,400. When was that? I mean, was that during the peak of ICO insanity? I feel like it was a little bit afterwards, you know, and... So I don't know if those two, if like we can say that Ethereum only pumps when ICO market is pumping, but I think what we can say probably is that if there is no ICO interest, then it is harder for Ethereum to pump. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, except there's one more ingredient that I didn't really think about either, which is that a ton of that Ethereum went to all these shitty ICOs, and those ICOs own token is now so fucking deeply in the toilet that people are going to be selling their Ethereum hoards, and people are panicking because Ethereum's worth nothing now. So it's kind of like a vicious cycle, a perfect storm of shitty conditions stemming from the ICO boom, as I read.
Yeah. It might just be like the bottom fell out, right? Like we talked about last time, and you know, I did get a little bit heated, but I was just like, well, what is, like, because I was thinking about it and I was like, you know, I was trying to think about a year ago, right? When I would talk to you and some of our other friends, and you know, there was all this Ethereum stuff coming up. Remember, there were like upgrades that were coming.
Yeah, what was that?
Yeah, Metropolis, and there were upgrades coming, and Vitalik was going to talk at TechCrunch Connect or something like that. Do you remember that? Like, there's all this sort of, there are these signposts that people were pointing to saying, like, this is why this is a good investment. It has progress, it has a future, it has a face. And I just felt like there was none of that excitement anymore. Now, it might be that I like no longer read the Ethereum Reddit every day like I used to, but I don't think that sort of hype around specific future events exists anymore. And so, yeah, there is a question right now of like, what are we really looking forward to in terms of Ethereum?
Joe Lubin from Consensus, Ethereum co-founder, was like, look, price crashes are going to happen. Like, it's still in development. It's going to take a bit. Like, maybe these price crashes, I think he said maybe they could be good. Like, I feel like the price is only a negative seen in the context of it at one point was significantly above $1,000 and it's now below $300. Like if it had slowly crawled here, it would be fine. It's the like experience of the roller coaster that has made this like seem pretty dead in the water now.
All right. So our third story, this is positive, I think, is that Bitcoin has come to the English Premier League. Or cryptocurrency at least. And the news story was that 7 Premier League clubs have agreed to set up a digital wallet with eToro, right? And this is sort of a sponsorship that eToro, which is a wallet and investment program, I think, from Tel Aviv. The teams are Brighton and Hove Albion, Cardiff City, Crystal Palace, Leicester City, Newcastle, Southampton, and Tottenham. So within that group, there are some pretty big clubs. I mean, I think Brighton and Cardiff. Cardiff just got promoted this year to the EPL. Leicester obviously won a couple of years ago in one of the surprising results in all sports history. Newcastle is a storied big club, and Tottenham is one of the most popular clubs in the world. So, this is actual real sort of engagement, I think, that...
These people really took their money. Like, I feel like this, the basis of the story is basically them being like, we're willing to pay you a bunch of money in Bitcoin. And they were like, cool, we'll take it. They're like, you'll set it all up and we can exchange it for pounds if we want to. Fine. Whatever you want.
The head of eToro's UK division, his name is Iqbal Gandam, had a statement about this, and he said, Quote, today's announcement is a first small step on a long road to football fully embracing blockchain technology. Education will be key so that industries can understand the potential, and so getting global exposure through these Premier League clubs represents a great opportunity to raise awareness. Blockchain brings transparency, which means it can improve the experience for everyone who loves the beautiful game. That is basically right out of any type of shitcoin ICO. Like, there's absolutely no explanation of why this is true or how it's going to happen. But hey, I respect the hustle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you sent me this and I started clicking around and I ended up on some story about how like UEFA is using blockchain for ticketing to like make sure there's like no duplicates of tickets. And I was just like, I literally have no idea what this means. It's like they tested it at a stadium in Estonia. And I'm like, here we are trying to sync the Infura chain, which is still sitting at 86%. Like, you're telling me that this whole stadium was running some kind of a blockchain ticketing? I don't even know how to read these articles anymore. In some ways, this eToro story, I at least understand what they mean, which is they made a Bitcoin wallet and paid millions of dollars in Bitcoin to put eToro logos on their jerseys. Now, one thing I don't understand is my understanding of the Premier League was like each team had kind of like a unique jersey advertisement scheme. But so there's going to be eToro on all of these different jerseys?
Oh, no. I think that it would just be like at the stadium or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Because that's what I thought. I kind of like the history of like them pair, you know, the like pairings of teams and sponsors and how that like works into the jersey.
Yeah. And look, this is not like the NBA or the MLB where people are crying foul and saying this like once Tony and storied and ethical institution is now taking dirty money and giving itself over to corporate sponsors. Like, a lot of the sponsors on EPL team jerseys are like Chinese gambling sites and stuff like that.
I feel like the most common money in the EPL is like Russian oligarch who made money on oil markets, like oil markets in kind buyout jerseys on like said Premier League team. I mean, like, the companies that I do not recognize on jerseys, they're almost always Russian gas companies.
Yeah, and every other company, every other jersey has like a Middle Eastern airline on it. So it's
or a Russian oil or a Middle Eastern oil.
Chinese gambling, like Saudi airlines or Qatari airlines, and Russian gas companies. That's about it. So, welcome the blockchain to that wonderful triumph. It's good. In that story, I actually found a much funnier story, which is that there's a team in Gibraltar, right? It's a pro team. I didn't realize that Gibraltar had a Premier League. Is Gibraltar even a country? Like, I thought it was just like is that where the Strait of Gibraltar is?
I think it's like a territory, like sort of in the like Puerto Rico.
So Gibraltar model. United, a football team playing in Gibraltar's semi-professional Premier Division, is the first one to pay its players with cryptocurrency. So there's also like a football team or a soccer team out there that pays its players in cryptocurrency. This seems like a terrible idea, by the way. That's why I brought it up.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. So I ask you, Jay, you've left your employment at Vice. But you've got other employment opportunities. Your next job says, Jay, this is the salary we're offering you, these benefits. One more thing, you have to take payment in Bitcoin and/or you have to take payment in the token of the company.
Absolutely not. No.
Do you accept this? What if it's not optional? What if it's like you can own like the job, like it's a great paying job, but it pays in Bitcoin?
I would say
I don't have a
problem. They would have to pay me double in Bitcoin what I would have accepted in US dollars. Yeah.
Double?
So they would have to pay
because to make up for the volatility or just for the inconvenience?
Both. So if they're going to pay me, let's say just out of, you know, if they're going to pay me $50,000 a year, I think I would need $100,000 a year in Bitcoin.
What if your Bitcoin compensation is pegged to the value of the dollar? So it's a payout in Bitcoin, but it's Bitcoin that's like you're getting the same amount of.
No, I would need $100,000 in Bitcoin pegged to the US dollar at that time. Yeah.
Wow. See, I have no problem. I'm like, okay, if you're going to peg it, like it's going to be like a stable value, pay me it. And I can either like keep it in Bitcoin or I can just trade
it. Yeah, but then you have to pay taxes on it.
You have to pay tax on it as income anyway.
Yeah, but you have to pay taxes on the income and the sale of Bitcoin. Oh, you yeah, so? For sure.
So you think all these people are getting paid in Bitcoin are paying double taxes?
Well,
if
they immediately cash it out to U.S. dollars, yeah. Why wouldn't they?
It's one or the other. Because the cost basis is how much they like. Let's say you like they pay you out at Bitcoin 5,000.
Yeah.
Okay. They pay you one Bitcoin for a week's of work, $5,000.
It's not too bad.
Okay. Then you immediately cash that in and you got 5,000 US dollars. Okay. So either that's a capital gain that you gain that much in your portfolio or it's income, but it's not both.
I don't think so because I think that you basically are paying. I don't think like is the IRS going to really sit there and acknowledge that you got that Bitcoin out of income?
Well, you'd have to.
And how are they? How is the company going to pay your Bitcoin based like W-2 and take that tax out of the payment that they give you?
It's got each transaction is like timestamped with a US dollar amount, and then you just basically calculate everything. Look, I don't know how they do it, but it's not like that crazy that someone could do.
Okay, I'm sticking with my guns. I would need like double.
I agree. It seems like a pain in the ass. And I would say the further away you get from Bitcoin to like, I'm getting paid in shitcoin X, you really have to pay people at a premium.
Yeah. I don't think that we don't even have to ask the question of whether or not this is good or bad for Bitcoin, right? It obviously is neither. It's just like a funny story. And I do hope at some point, much like the people at the World Series of Poker were wearing like Blockfolio patches, it would be kind of cool to see some EPL team or even like Championship League team, something, some lower division team wearing like a crypto-based patch. I'm actually kind of surprised that like no crypto company has tried to sponsor an MLS team or something like that. You know, like it seems like that would be kind of obvious.
I mean, I'm not sure if everyone wants their business. Some of these companies seem shyer. It seems like the EPL already has a rich history of like catering to the like OTB yeah. industry and like degeneracy of every kind. So it doesn't, it makes sense to me they would be an early adopter. But yeah, I think if crypto succeeds, we'll see this everywhere. And it seems like the people who are going to pump advertising dollars in are these kind of exchangey, financial producty. Like my understanding of eToro is it's sort of in the Robinhood vein.
So it's like I've not used it. That
yes, and I think it's got like futures and stuff like that.
Oh, cool. So can we sign up for it?
we could with a VPN. I think it's not come to America yet. I don't think, but I think it is coming legally to America. I believe so. Probably we will see some eToro. Sponsor the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We want to be your U.S. ambassador.
We literally said nothing bad about eToro that whole time, so.
I know. eToro is like is going to emerge remarkably unscathed from this segment, and we'd make great U.S. brand ambassadors. We're available to attend sporting matches, to gamble on air, whatever it is you want us to do, we're down. And that was Bitcoin Talk. Thanks very much for listening. I edited this week's show myself, which probably showed, although I blame Jay's Equi office mostly. Thanks very much to our partners at Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. That includes transcripts. If you're reading the transcripts, you should become a member. It's $5 a month. Okay, send us an email, hi@cointalk.show. We'll be back soon.